I'm an addict and my name is Winnie. Amen. Only through God's grace and mercy and the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous am I clean today. I thank God first and foremost in you people. I'd like to thank this convention, Diversity is Our Strength, for inviting me. You know, this is a good convention. All conventions are good. This convention is especially good. I get to see a lot of my friends a lot of times throughout different states that we've had an opportunity to, you know, interact, build relationships, travel together, you know, do a number of things together. You know, and I don't know about nobody else, but anybody new, I want to welcome you. If you just come to Narcotics Anonymous, this is your first convention, welcome. Narcotics Anonymous works. If it can work for addicts like us, it can work for an addict like you. You know, we always extend the invitation to allow you to know that living clean is a wonderful thing. A wonderful thing. You know, you'll embark in an opportunity that will present itself to you in the event that you stay, that you will see wonderful, magnificent, marvelous things happen and make a transformation in your life too. You know, and this is a gathering. This is a coming together, you know, of us through, you know, everything, all trials, tribulations, ups, downs, you know, good times, uncomfortable times, times that ain't that good, you know, and the topic is resentment, the silent killer, you know, and as a result of the step process, you know, when I got here, I didn't really know what to expect. You know, I knew that my way of doing things were no longer working. I knew the pain and being unbearable in the life that I was living was not conducive to what I wanted for my life. I no longer liked who I became. And I came here and y'all introduced me to me. Y'all only not introduced me to me. Y'all introduced me to a God today that I have a relationship with. A God today that I understand. A God today that I just don't have to say what he is, what he does, but I understand in the relationship that we have whose he is and what he's done for me in my life. And as a result, not just my life, in my children's life, in the lives of people that love me, in the lives of the people that went through all that they went through with me before I embarked on this opportunity. You know, and I got an opportunity as a result of this program through the step process to find out some information for me about some resentments, some things that were unpleasurable, some things that I disliked about me that for so long I pretended were okay. You know, I was unaware of the uncomfortability of some things about myself that I didn't like, because for so long I lived with the illusion that it was comfortable, that it was okay. We talking about a silent killer. We talking about something like that you could put on mute. Huh? We talking about something that goes unrecognized. That for so long, because of it being familiar, and because of it becoming comfortable in a comfortable state, but at an abnormal state, but because our life had become an abnormal thing for so long, we thought it was the right way to go and the right thing to do. You know, I have a son that'll be 21 years old next month. I need to say my son was 5 months old when I got clean. I need to say I used for the whole time in carrying that one child out of 5 children that I have. And I need to say that using when I carried him became comfortable. I never looked at it as it wasn't a good thing to do. I was getting high, trying to find ways and means to get more. It never appeared to me that it probably wasn't a good thing based on the fetus that was inside of me growing. But the condition I want to say of my son is an ongoing prison life. And I take responsibility. Listen, if it wasn't for the eighth and ninth step, I wouldn't understand or recognize harm. I wouldn't identify with what the program and the beauty of what the program allowed me to know about the part that I played in my son's life. Now, I'm not saying every left turn he make or every right turn he make is based on what has gone on back in 87 and 88. But I'm looking at the reality of the life and the opportunities and the choices that my son didn't have as a result of my addiction. Now, I don't know about nobody else. I'm talking about for me. See, I got to do this for me because every time they sentence my son, the resentment of my choices that I made ain't comfortable for me. I don't know about nobody else. I'm riding with my kids. I love my kids. They say you might get a bad apple out of one. But I'm talking about me. You know, my son was faced with a lot of time 3 years ago in Texas. He came back. We rumbled the case. As a mom, I did what I need to do because that was the responsibility. I'm riding with mine. I don't know about nobody else. I'm riding with mine. I've been riding with mine for the duration. I ain't had no help. With five kids, I've been a mom. I ain't gonna say I know how to be a father, but I did a damn good job. People say you act like you know a dude sometimes. I got a nigga attitude because I do nigga motherfucking jobs. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It ain't to take nothing from nobody's manhood. It ain't to take nothing from nobody's womanhood. But listen, when you put in a position to have a responsibility and have a job, it's your duty for me as a mother to do what I need to do to play the best effective part in my kids' life. Listen, I ain't never had no problem. I ain't never had no relationship that meant that much to me that we was eating peanut butter and jelly and we feeding a nigga steak. Ain't gonna happen. No. No. Listen, we eating hot dogs and you eating caviar? Nope. And I don't even like caviar, but nope. Yeah, for real. You know, because I know that we can get in a relationship or we can find somebody that we like and we'll change our name, our religion, our residence, geographical shit. Just move. Yeah. Based on we found love. Now, I ain't talking about nothing that I don't know about. I'm talking about my own personal experiences, you know. But as a result of those things, you know, they expedited my son, you know, from Pennsylvania, and he's back now again in the state of Texas. And, you know, I love my boy. And I'm going to be the best mother that I could be. And I'm going to do everything that God has put me in position to be able to do. Because what I'm aware of is that I've been able to do the things that I need to do in my children's life because God put me in this position. God gave me the ability to be motivated enough to want to be a mother, to have some of the things that I have, to be able to do some of the things that I do. Look, in 2001, I had a back surgery. You know, in 2001, I accomplished some wonderful things as a result of this program. You know, I came here. You know, I got married. You know, I know what it's like to be a wife. You know, I came here. You know, I accomplished, you know, some education and, you know, did some magnificent, wonderful, you know, things as a result of recovery and staying clean. You know, I did what y'all did in the meetings. You know, I went to school early. I stayed late. I got help in things and areas that I needed help. You know, like the meetings. You know, come early, stay through the meeting, stay late. If you feel good, stay to help somebody. You know what I mean? If you ain't feeling good, stay and get some help. I did that with school and most of my life to the best of my ability. You know, and I had the back surgery. And I went through some, you know, difficult times in, you know, the marriage, you know, after all the accomplishment. You know, in 2003, I buried my father. The best man that God ever gave me an opportunity to have a relationship and enough. You know, I strongly suggest to, you know, my friends that, you know, like, having a relationship with my son and men having a relationship with their daughter through my experience is an unexplainable thing. My father will always be my hero. He was a good man. He was a good father. You know, he provided everything that we needed in our life, all our life. I could never blame using on how I came up. I wasn't raised to come up to go get high. I wasn't taught that, you know, it was this going on in the household. That's not how I was raised. It was my environment. It was the choices I made, you know, and the things that I chose to participate in. But with all those things that happened, right, you know, after I lost my father, you know, in 2005, I had two hip replacements. I had one in January. I had one in November. So I had a back surgery. I had my left hip replaced. I had my right hip replaced. You know, I buried my father. You know, I found out I had lupus in 2006. And I'm rumbling. I'm a sure enough fighter. I'm going to live with it because I ain't going to die from it. I've been on chemo for 3 years. What? Two hip replacements, still could drop it like it's hot. What? You can't count an old girl out. Why would you? I ain't gonna count myself out. You know what I mean? They said I was permanently disabled. I would no longer be employable. It wasn't easy. After the hard effort, work, and fight that I put into going through a marriage that fell apart, burying my father, working hard, turning in papers when it was a rough time at home, working two jobs, going to school. Yeah. It wasn't nothing easy, but we talking about living life. We came here to live. If you want to live and you want the benefits of living, you got to do whatever is required for what you're looking for out of life to be able to live. You know, I wasn't happy about it. I was upset about it. I was hurt about it. You know, it talks about resentment, the silent killing. You know, like killing is the slang. Somebody. You know, and just to be totally out for the count. And them say, you ain't got another shot at everything. You got clean. Stay clean. Been clean over 20 years now. And you got to utilize what you working with. So a lot of times we got to play the hand that we've been dealt. And it ain't always easy to play the hand. But if I don't pick up the hand, I ain't in the game. And if I ain't in the game, I can't play. I want to be in on stuff. I'm the kind of girl that still want to be in on what's happening. See, I know what's behind me. I can't afford to turn back around to go where I came from. I can't give up on what's ahead of me. See, I know it's more ahead of me than it's behind me. So I got to keep going forward. I got to keep my eye on the prize. Listen, in the last year, I have been through my son going back to jail. My grandson that was a year old being thrown out of a second floor window. Huh? My daughter's house that I work hard at continuing trying to maintain and help her with being raided. Huh? My 7-year-old grandson that lives with me under the terms and the conditions that it's a better structure at my mom's house. They've been 302 three times within a year. That I gotta make sure, because my mom and grandmom always usually have a little bit more stability than mine might have. The structure. See, y'all gave me structure for my life. When I look at the investment that the structure of what we had, y'all said if it die, it'll fall and die from within. So, you know, I have a structure that I try to instill in my children's life to the best of my ability in being a single parent. And being a mother that God has given the ability to be a providing parent. So we go back and forth and we do what we have to do under his condition. I got a 15-year-old son that's chronic diabetes, asthmatic, right? That goes in and out of the hospital. That's a good kid, a good child, a good student. That didn't never have a relationship with his father for 15 years. That when we went to court, they told him to give me $30 a month. With all his assets and all of what he got. But listen what happened. As angry and resentful as I was when the judge sat there and said that. And I said, oh, I'm appeal this. They got to be kidding me. He got about 4 or 5 properties. You know, I was all up in his inventory. He got money. I've been taking care of kids all my life. But something happened. I went to my son's graduation, right? And, you know, he got some awards, and, you know, real good awards. George Washington Carver Award, Science and Technology Award, you know, the English Award. And they said at the end of the ceremony, they said we would like to get a principal's award away. You know, I was already pumped, feeling good. I didn't know what was going to happen. They didn't prepare me for this moment. But I knew I had made an investment. Yeah. And the principal's award went to my son. Something happened. I looked in his eyes. He looked in my eyes. I start crying. And I realized the appeal that I made with the courts was no longer needed. Because God had given him something that money can't buy. We're talking about when you make an investment and you're looking for something in life. It's some things in here that are priceless. Listen, I love clothes, I love money, I love things, I love gambling, but it's something that goes on up in here that money can't buy. And if you ain't taking it home, and you ain't giving it to nobody, and you still looking for it in a relationship, and you don't know how to be in one with yourself, you ain't going to get it nowhere because you missed the head. It's something greater than all that. It's something that happens in here as a result of living that an orgasm can't give you and sustain you. Now, you can bust a good nut now, ain't? I mean, don't hold me from holding you up. Yeah. But I'm talking about something that's going to sustain the goodness that's within you. We talking about something that's internal. We ain't talking about the external, about what you can go to the store and buy. We ain't talking about the car you can drive. We ain't talking about the house you can live in. We talking about internally. Some peace, some love, some freedom, some dignity, some integrity. Huh? We talking about something that you can't go and buy from one of the most exclusive stores, Neiman's. Huh? We talking about priceless. Listen, as a result of some of the things that have occurred and going on in my life, listen, I had a nice luxury car, right? Something else that went on throughout the year. You know, and I had this car for going on 3 years, you know, and I got the car, you know, the emblem on it said, vehicle of high standards. The logo, the symbol on it, that's what it said. If you go on this specific vehicle, you know, you would be looking to ride out in the sunset. Because the emblem on the vehicle states that this is what it produces. Now, we know that man-made and mechanical and technology, you know, but I'm talking about you ain't looking at all that when you going to Stop Shop and Cop. So as through the year last year, you know, I was having some major difficulties with the vehicle. And as a result of the major difficulties, false pride and ego said, you know, rent a car and just leave it sitting, you know, you'll deal with it, you know. Then I started looking up and, you know, we was going places of distance. And I was riding with other people. And I was still paying a car note, car insurance, and, you know, I was somebody, you coming to get me, I'm riding with you. And it started making sense that there wasn't no sense. But false pride and ego said, you know, take it back and see if they can do something. And so I went back and forth with the same situation, but I sat on it. I sat on it for about 8 months, knowing that this vehicle was not producing what I was looking for. So as a result, it was a convention in Atlantic City. And I had this celebration. I celebrated, you know, my anniversary. And, you know, I had some people, you know, come out and, you know, support me in it. And we had a good time. And, you know, I began to look at that on my anniversary, the convention that was going on, that because of the wiring to this vehicle, I had to ride with somebody else. And what really got me was people start picking me up, and their cars was 10 years older than mine, you know, and it wasn't of a, you know, a label of what I was riding, you know. And their car was like 10 years older than mine. I was like, damn. But I went with the ride because I was trying to get where I was going, you know what I mean? I wasn't that false pride and egoed up. And what happened was, I had to wind up giving my car back. And you know, again, in life, when you got something you want to keep based on the condition of why you want it, we go through it being a strain to relinquish what we expecting from it. I'm talking about it wasn't a human being. I was expecting something from this vehicle that it couldn't produce no more. From a car. I was angry with the people that I got it from. Resentful, if you want to call it, since that's the topic, we can fit that in. All right. You know. But the reality was that the denial and still holding on to shit that ain't working no more. Wanting things to still produce what you looking for when it is not possible. You know, and as a result, I don't have no car, right? But let me tell you something. When I got clean, I came in, I had a car. When I got clean, there were things that I had that I thought that made me be the person that I was. And as a result of this program, I began to really value and look at that things can't make me be who I am. Now, don't get me wrong. I love exclusive things. I personally, probably, eventually, will go get a car. I can go get a. It's not really a problem. But it's something about sacrificing. You know, in my heart, in my spirit, it's something that allows me to know sometimes that I need to be obedient to what I feel in my internal spirit about what my past. See, I don't want it to be things making me believe that it makes me be who I am. Because I'm not who I am based on what I wear. I'm not who I am based on what I got. I am not who I am based on what I don't got. But if I stand for who I believe in and what God has gave me the ability to see in who and what I am, then I can be what I am. You know, recovery has really allowed me to really, you know, grow up. Like, I really know how to have relationships with people, and it don't have to be a motive. It don't have to be a hidden agenda. You know, I've had an opportunity to have relationships with men, and listen, I do not have to be giving you my pussy for you to be my friend. Yeah, I really don't. I don't know about nobody else. Like, you can respect me, and we can do whatever we need to do and embark on a friendship, and we do not have to be intimate only through a sexual act. That's big girl stuff. I don't know about nobody else. Listen, I ain't swinging from chandeliers and shit no more, no way. Fuck out of here. You all that legs behind you. Oh, fuck all that. No. A bitch almost 50, for anybody that don't know. Yeah. No. You know, like I said, don't get me wrong. Busting ain't done nobody wrong. I ain't mad at nobody. But my life for me today is so much far beyond a nut. I'm just saying. See, because if you ain't doing me how I think you supposed to do me, after you done came and after I done came, we gonna have major problems anyway. Yeah, well, I'm just saying. You know what I'm saying? So I say all those things to say about the things that I have shared that you too can change. Make better choices and decisions with your life. We not gonna hold you to, you got to do anything in here to experience the freedom of active addiction other than don't use. You gonna ride whatever storm you need to ride, and you gonna have to ride it out. It ain't no going over it. It ain't no going under it. Whatever you got that you gotta go through, you gonna have to go through it. You know what I'm saying? It comes a point in a time where you have to grow because you want to grow. You have to get better because you want to get better. Ain't nobody going to hold no gun to your head. Ain't nobody going to say that, listen, you ain't going to get from point A to point B if you don't do exactly what they done. That's not how it goes. But what we will allow you to know is that you too will experience things in recovery that you don't like, that are extremely uncomfortable, that will take you to a level and a point that you may not want to be at. But again, these are things that happen. And if you keep your head up and you keep trusting God, you know, it's like an account. Whatever you put in it, you'll get out of it. If you don't put nothing in, you don't get nothing out. And one thing that I know is if you get a bank account and they give you a checking account and you put an investment in that account, when you open the account, if you put $100 in it. If you take $20 out five times, your bean is gone. You go back to the Mac, it's going to say insufficient funds. Don't put nothing into your recovery. Don't get a sponsor. Don't get a home group. Don't get a support group. Don't get some people that's in your life, that's around you, that's feeling good about some of the things, some of the time in life that this program have to offer. You'll either be miserable as they ass. See, because ain't nobody draining me all the time. You always fucked up. Fuck all that. All the fucked up shit I got to deal with, I'm still smiling at the end of the day. I might not always like it. I might not always want to deal with it. I might not always want the hand that I've been dealt. But I can't be in the game if I don't pick up the hand and play it. I'm an addict named Winnie. Thanks for letting me share.
I'd like to thank Winnie one more time for that great message. Our second speaker, and it is my pleasure to introduce my grand sponsor, Usman D.
Thank you.
Nice job.
Thank you. I love you.
Love you too.
I'm a recovered addict named Usman. Ooh, I had to pee. God damn. I was out of resentment with my bladder. Man. So let me go ahead and get up and get that out the way. I also want to thank God for everything. I mean it just like that, everything. I want to thank the programming committee. Which one of these is live? This one? Huh? I want to thank my sister, Winnie. I love Winnie to death. I was telling her before she spoke, not only do I love her, I respect her and her commitment and her style and her perseverance through any and all circumstances, right? And I love you. I have too many friends here to name. And that's why I tell you early and often I love you. Those that I see on the regular, and those that I rarely, if ever, see, I love you just the same, you know. Resentment's the silent killer. Let me get this out the way. I got a call from a sponsee. He said, the guy called me from Texas and said, this is a little while ago. He was crying and shit, and he said, you know they found Usman dead with a spike in his arm. And I said, God damn, what you gotta do? How many years you gotta do this? Huh? Before people come serving up some kind of foolishness like that. We ain't all in that position where we subject to just wind up dead with a spike in our arm. Do too much work for that kind of foolishness. Damn. You don't need to have to try to kill me. I did it enough times for all of us. Anyway, resentment's the silent killer. I got my literature, I got my notes, because I'm old, you know. But it's funny because when you get commitment like this, you get excited and you can't even read. You know, you just go blind and shit. So we're going to do this Martin Luther King Jr. style. Every so often I'm going to say, somewhere I read. And if you don't believe me, we can go over it later. I'll show you where I got it from and shit, right? But I don't trust myself to be fumbling and bumbling through everything. So from time to time, I'm going to say, somewhere I read. And it's in there. It's like the tomato paste and the spaghetti sauce. It's in there. Resentments. I have to share about resentments from two different standpoints, from the before recovery standpoint and then the after recovery standpoint, in order to do the topic justice, okay? Let's go before. It was difficult for me before recovery not to have resentments. Initially, I had none. I was a real happy little child. But I was born in a country where, not in the too distant past, they said, you just 3/5 of a man. That's enough right there to give you a resentment. But in other words, before a second has ticked off the clock in your life, you don't add up to a whole human being. So I had people in my family who themselves were working off resentments. Now, something happens when you are in an environment where you're being nurtured by people who are missing a little something themselves. And I came from a very large family, 13. And we had, we were like the United Nations. All right? We had light people and jet black people and every shade in between. I had 4 gay sisters and 1 flaming brother. And the significance of this is we were poor. So one of our most cherished pastimes was to fuck with each other. And we were very adept at finding just that particular chink in your armor that would strain your deodorant. So, for those of us who were black, you black bastard. You know what I mean? Those of us who were light, you pasty motherfucker. You could pretty much fill in the blanks. If you was fat, you fat fuck. Huh? Skinny bitch. You short little fire plug bastard. And God forbid you had a combination working. And I saw older members of my family doing the same thing. You know what I mean? I saw the women, the older women, they would tear a man up. You broke bastard. Yeah, so what happened was you say early in life man make the habit, later on in life the habits make the man. So we developed the habit of comparison real early. This is all related to resentments. You can't have a good resentment without first getting into comparison. Huh? Without comparison, what are you resenting? Huh? You gotta compare something to something in order to have a resentment. And the thing about my family was, still is, if you didn't have a resentment, we'd give you one. For real. We would tell one another, like, you too dumb to know you're ugly. Ugly motherfucker. And I don't mean to be profanating my English, but I got to give you the flavor, the full flavor of the Pringle. I got to get you to understand the atmosphere in which my makeup was nurtured. This is the stuff we heard, you know, and it follows you into adulthood. So then you grow up and you see somebody that used to call you the particular names. You don't know them from a can of paint, but you automatically got a resentment against them because they remind you of something you experienced when you were growing up. You know, resentment comes from the Latin resentir, which means to resent something. Somewhere I read, it says a resentment is experiencing something out of the past over and over again in the present. In other words, somebody smacked you when you were 10, right? And you've been smacking yourself ever since. Huh? The very thought of their name makes your face sting. You feel the smack. Oh, let's make it funky. You could carry this into relationships. Mm-hmm. You had a particular relationship where you got burnt. Yeah. Don't matter whether you're male, female, none of that matters because we're talking on the level of feelings right now. I'm talking about everybody had that good one where they just did open heart surgery on you with no anesthesia. You know what I mean? And then you say, no one will ever, I mean but ever, make me experience that type of white hot searing pain again. It's a wrap. Never gonna get me like that again. No, 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 no. And why? Because of the resentment that you experienced. So coming into recovery, listen, and somewhere I read, we got a whole story in the basic text called Resentment Against the World. And before you get the better perspective and the proper orientation towards life, you recovering at it, you know, and you come from, if the cat died, I used, right? You come into recovery with a whole laundry list of resentments to justify the cockamamie bullshit you just came out of. I used because I'm from Newark, shit. Yeah. That's what we do. If you grow up in Newark, you get high. That's what you do. You can't grow up in Newark during a certain era and not get high. What the fuck is wrong with you? Matter of fact, don't bring him around no more. Talking about he don't get high. Corny motherfucker. See, that old stuff come up again. Worst thing you could do is be corny. Yeah. Come from a broken home. My daddy left. My mama left. This, that, and the third happened to me. So I got resentments up the wazoo. So coming into recovery is where the freedom comes in. Coming into recovery is where you can get past resentments if you do recovery right. Because coming into recovery allows you to live happy, joyous, and free. And part of that freedom is freedom from resentments. Right? Early on, it was a struggle for me, particularly in the area of relationships. I could not figure out for the life of me why they all seem to go sour. And I remember talking to my sister-in-law one day, and she said, another one bites the dust, huh? Let me ask you a question. Where are you meeting these young ladies? You remind me of somebody who goes up into the hospital, walking down the ward, talking about, damn, they all sick. Maybe you should stop going up on the unit looking for love. And if you get a good sponsor, they will not allow you to peg your happiness to someone else and whip out your blame thrower all the time, crying about emotional upheaval caused by someone else. Let me share with you how my sponsor broke me out of that habit. Rather graphic, but it worked. He said, imagine me and you walking down the street. And you say, good God Almighty, do you smell that? Oh my goodness, what a smell. And I, as your sponsor, tell you, that was me. I just took a shit. Thought I'd save some time. So while we're walking, I just took a shit. Nice, big, healthy shit. And you know what, Usman? This was a particularly heavy load. I would like you to do me a favor, and if you would, just reach back there and help me carry some of this shit, man. He said, you would be quick to point out, I'm sponsor, I love you like that, but that's your shit. I am not going to carry your shit. Right? He said, well, if you wouldn't carry literal shit, you shouldn't carry emotional shit. Other people's baggage. I asked some sponsees to carry some of my shit this morning. I did, didn't I? I woke up in the room and there was no iron. And you know, vanity is a big part of our insanity, right? Let me get that out the way. I had no iron. I don't do wrinkles in recovery. It's not a good look. It's not a good look. I don't do that. I used to work in the cleaners. I was the silk man. You know, all you women, you know them skirts with the 1,000 pleats? I had to do them shits. So I ironed my ass off. And here I am with no iron. I call downstairs and they said, well, you know how you people are. Y'all don't bring shit back, so. I said, no problem, I got sponsees. I called my sponsees up, I said, listen, I don't have no iron. Y'all need to bring me an iron. I said, we going to breakfast. Wrinkles ain't gonna kill you. And the basic text, 2:10, it says, today I spot check myself when I'm off the spiritual being and share my resentments with another human being so that they will be cut in half. Some days if the resentment don't get cut in half, you will. But they'll let you know you ain't got nothing coming. You's about to be a wrinkle ass today. Yes, sir. Let's see what kind of recovery you really working with. And they were right. They were right. Because in recovery, listen, somewhere I read, listen, this is nice. If you're truly spiritual, there are no tragedies. For the truly spiritual man, for the truly spiritual woman, there are no tragedies. Unless you're multi-phasing up in here. Your thing ain't live, it's just Memorex. God is good all the time, blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, you from the not really tribe. I mean, if your cup overfloweth, if you're the grateful addict, then why don't you write a gratitude list? Because it's a sucker move. Yeah, gratitude list is a sucker move. What if stuff starts falling off your list? What you supposed to be then? And if you don't believe me, live a little. And you will be confronted with real life funnies. I remember being in the hospital, and they said, we're going to do this heart procedure on you. Do what you got to do, doc. Because I'm built like that. He said, that's good. Glad to hear that. And we're good at what we do. We do these procedures all the time. But I'm required by law to let you know you could die. That's why you need to sign this consent form that says you recognize that in a few minutes, you could be dead. And it's okay. You give us permission to kill you, and you're not going to sue us or nothing. Well, you can't really be dead anyway. And it's at times like that, that like the guy said, you got to be ready instead of getting ready. Yeah. We say the proof is in the way you live. You know, so ain't no time to go to the meeting. Ain't no time to raise your hand in the air and share like you just don't care. Ain't no time to call your sponsor. Ain't no time to get with your network. Things are going to be based upon the work that you've done. What you going to do now? Who is that? She sounds like she's doing one of them things you was talking about. Right up in here. So in recovery, you can wind up broke. Have you ever been broke in recovery? You could be recovering like that and wake up one day and be where broke would be a step up. You could be doing everything one can do in recovery and wake up and be way past broke. Don't know how you got there. It just is what it is. Not only are you broke, but you're going to be broke. And while you're broke, other people trying to make you more broke. And calling you on your brokenness. And telling you, you ain't really broke. Prove how broke you are. And it can make you feel like you don't want to play no more. That's why you got to do the work we do up in here, so that when it gets rough, you can dance in the midst of the fire. You can lean into the sharp points. You can sing in a foreign land. That's why you got to learn up in here how to switch frequencies. See, we got something that a lot of people don't have. We can go to a whole nother level. We can switch to a whole nother frequency that can get us through anything. And that's what you're supposed to do. That's why we are here. To learn how to switch frequencies. If you don't switch frequencies, you'd be like somebody looking for an FM station on an AM dial. Because you will be seeking that which you can't buy. You'll be seeking that which nobody can give you. You'll be seeking that which can only come forth from within you. That's why they say it's an inside job. You got to do the work in here so that come what may, you will be all right. If the relationship is over, you can say, well, it's been one. I'm so happy to have known you. Don't be a stranger. Huh? Because if not, what are you really saying? Huh? The work in here is about learning how not to misplace your faith. Addicts only make one mistake, and that's misplacing that faith. We do it 1,000 different ways. And you can wake up and do it any day of the week, but you will get the misplaced faith blues. You misplace your faith in a relationship, you will get the misplaced faith in relationship blues. Guaranteed. You misplace your faith in money, addicts can't have enough money. Because however much money you give an addict, they can find ways and means to spend every drop of it. Because the more money we get, correspondingly, the classier our disease gets. You just shared about it. I can't drive that with my money. You can't expect me to still live there. I have money. Matter of fact, you no longer have enough money to even be around me no more. I need to get with the money people. Can't have enough property, you can't have enough prestige. That's why they say clean time doesn't equal recovery. Money, property, prestige doesn't equal recovery. Social acceptability doesn't equal recovery. Because why? Nothing equals recovery. That's the beautiful truth. Recovery is a fluid concept. You either do the work and be happy, or you don't do the work and you'll be miserable. And happiness is a choice. I have nothing to do with you. I have nothing to do with a joke in Texas saying Usman's dead. Yeah. Fuck him. No, that's not. Rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated. Happiness springs forth from within. Happiness is our birthright. You were born to be happy. Now, if you choose to farm your happiness out, that's on you. That's why in the 11th step it says, when I have the right content, I'll be content. When I have the right content, I'll be content. When I do the work in here and get myself right with God, that's it. It's game over. We could close shop right now. Because a lot of things are going to come and go. But God is unchanging. He will never leave you. Regardless of what you think, regardless of what you feel, how you feel, what you're going through, etc. That's why we say get entirely ready. I want to share about this before I shut it down. Why we say get entirely ready. Entirely ready. Don't make the mistake I've made. Get entirely ready to have God do something and then judge God based upon whether I think he's done it. Because when you're entirely ready, you can't take issue with God's manner of dealing with things. I used to wear the older members of my family out because they love me hard. And I would prey upon that to get a come up, to get a jump start. I was seriously codependent. I used to go to my mother and she said, God damn, I will be so glad when you grow up. Ooh! I said, Ma, that's extra. All that for $20? She said, no, I really will. I will be so glad when you grow up. And she'd take the $20 and hit me in the head with it. I said, Ma, that's extra. And I see. She said, I bet you pick it up. But my point is this. I didn't like being codependent. So what did God do? God removed all them people in that generation. Now, good Sharon ass, let's see if you're going to put a question mark where God put a period. You don't know how to manage money? He take your money. Now you don't have no money management problems. Because you're broke. You ain't got to worry about managing nothing. Just manage your ass to work. So, if you want to get entirely ready, you got to be entirely ready for God to do his thing in his manner and in his time. They say you can have anything in this world you want. There's only one requirement, infinite patience, which is in short supply because patience is the opposite of addiction. And how about if you really sincere about being entirely ready, being able to accept the fact that God ain't going to change nothing? What about he going to leave you just like you are so maybe you can be a teaching tool to others of how not to do it? Hey. If you're entirely ready, you got to be entirely ready for that. He might not change your condition at all. This might be as good as it's going to get. And the only question left is, can you stand to be blessed right now? This is as healthy as you're going to get. This is it. It's downhill from here. What about that? What about that? Can you still praise God? Under those circumstances, or are you still coming from the not really tribe? Because for real, you never had God in the equation anyway. You was just sharing some old slick shit. But secretly, you wanted to be the one to decide whether your prayers had been answered. And if you're the one to decide whether your prayers have been answered, who are you praying to? Praying to yourself on a sneak tip. You your own God with shade on it. You're talking about God, your will, not mine, be done, but not really. God, I turn my will and my life over to you. But come on, God. Haven't I suffered enough? Ain't I been broke long enough? Ain't I been without a mate long enough? Hasn't my health been compromised long enough? Some of y'all don't want to hear this shit. Because it's easier to have a resentment. Huh? By the time we get here, resentments are our friends. We polish them up, we nurture them, we shine them up, and we trot them out to one another. Let me tell you what that motherfucker did. You ain't gonna believe this shit. To me! Of all people! Ain't nothing like a good resentment. Huh? What you do with a good resentment? You trot it around, you pick it up early in the morning. Huh? Everybody you talk to, you share about it with them. Did I tell you what they said? Good thing I'm spiritual. Oh my goodness. They better be glad I'm in recovery. Somebody better tell them who they messing with. And yet, at the same time, call yourself reaching for nice spiritual principles like compassion and tolerance and patience. Do you know that some spiritual principles are like, some spirits, see, I'm working it. See that? Get them shut up signs, you gotta work these principles. Some spiritual principles are like cake mix. You know how you go and you want to do some cooking and it says, to get this thing right, you got to add some milk and some eggs and some this, that, and the other, right? If you want it to come out right. Well, some spiritual principles are like that. They come with preconditions too. In other words, you can't practice compassion, patience, tolerance, and stuff like that unless something bad happens. How are you going to practice compassion unless something disagreeable has occurred? How are you going to practice tolerance unless there's something you don't feel like tolerating? The only way you're going to practice certain spiritual principles is something happened that you don't agree with. And then it's a question of, can you recognize that that's a prerequisite to these spiritual principles? Somewhere I read, where there's been a wrong, the program teaches us the spirit of forgiveness. I'm talking about forgiving myself, forgiving others. We don't talk about that enough. The spirit of forgiveness doesn't necessarily always involve turning the other cheek. Just plain acceptance is the spirit of forgiveness. It's over. It's in the past. No need of sitting around playing the coulda, shoulda, wouldas, what if, only, and one more times. It's been one. Surrender is the spirit of forgiveness. It is what it is. You cannot unring a wrong bell. Forbearance is the spirit of forgiveness. Just because somebody gets one off on you don't mean you have to retaliate and get one back off on them. And here's one last sweet one. Overlooking. You see a wrong, just overlook it. Okay. Quick story and I'm done. The woman had to go to the bathroom real bad and she mistakenly went into the men's bathroom. But the urinals were on the other side of the stall, so she didn't realize, and she had to go. She had some bad food, so she needed to sit down. Well, y'all sit down anyway, but she needed to sit down for a while, is what I'm trying to say. So, yeah, it's going to take a minute, Winnie. So she went in there, and the stall door didn't have a latch, so she couldn't secure it. And while she was seated there, she heard voices that let her know she had gone into the wrong bathroom. But she heard men's voices. Did you see that game? That was bullshit, wasn't it? Yeah, Mac, that was bullshit. And they were going around to the urinal. She said, oh, no, I'm in the wrong bathroom. I'm going to be mortified if men come in here and push this stall. I can't get up right now, but I sure hope nobody pushed this stall door. And two men came in, one right behind the other. The first guy pushed the stall and saw her and said, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. She was mortified. She said, damn, why you have to see me like this? He left. Another guy came in. He pushed the door. And he said, oh, excuse me, buddy. He saw her too, see? But he allowed her to be secure in her womanhood. He practiced forbearance and overlooking so that she could feel better about having her panties down her ankles and shit. You understand what I'm saying? That's it, I'm done. My panties down my ankles.